Welcome to Lifelines Radio, a production of the Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation. I'm your host, Maria Gallagher, Legislative Director of the Federation. Joining us today is Keith Erdman, who uses his creativity to advance the cause of life. Welcome, Keith.
Good morning. How are you today, Maria?
I'm doing just fabulous. And yourself?
Well, thank you very much.
Good. Keith, how did you come to hold your pro-life beliefs?
Well, let me just say, first of all, I want to just thank you, Maria, and everyone at the Federation, because you do so much to protect and preserve life. And without the Federation, many, many babies would have not been born and many moms' lives would have been damaged for life. So I want to thank you. Please pass that along to everyone that is associated, from Mary Beliveau way back to many, many others that I could name for a long time. But let me just share with you, this is probably going to be my longest answer of the whole time as to how I came to hold pro-life beliefs. Pretty much I was sensitive to life all of my life, but through a series of circumstances, I was almost not born. My dad was miraculously spared in World War II. And he was part of the Normandy invasion. He was an artilleryman, and a 50 caliber machine gun on an aircraft came strafing in behind him and hit him in the back and in the head on his helmet. And the 50 caliber went into his body. He carried shrapnel all his life. When it hit his head, it only went through the helmet, through the liner, and partly into his skull, but never into the brain, no brain damage. So he was almost not here. So neither my brothers and sisters would have never been here had it not been for that. But so my sister Karen was born, my brother Dale was born first. My sister Karen was born a couple of years later, but she only lived a few years because of an umbilical cord was wrapped around her neck during birth. Be preventable now, obviously, but it was fatal then. It cut off her air supply. So I guess I was next. I was her replacement child, I guess. I'm not sure about that, but then my sister Kathy came along. But as we lived through our lives, in second grade, I can remember my appendix burst, and I was almost killed at that point in time. Luckily, I was able to get to the hospital quick enough and was taken care of. But in fast forward into high school, and I was, again, you know, thankful for life at that point. But in our high school civics class, we had broken up into debate teams. It was just part of the curriculum. And interestingly, the subject was abortion versus life. And I was assigned to be on the debate team to defend abortion and to promote it. And by the debate, we did the debate and voted by the class, and we won with promoting abortion. So even then, it was struck me how easy it was to convince other people that abortion was okay. It never, you know, really, because I don't hold that, I never held that view, but in promoting it, the whole class voted that we had won. So then at 17, my dad died in my arms of a massive heat attack at age 46. And he was mowing the grass for me because I was getting ready to go to a prom meeting. And his death changed me. Life became precious. It was irreplaceable. He was the face of that life for me. My faith experience had just started about 4 days before that event. So it was really new to me. I felt really lost. I felt alone. I unsure what to do next. I couldn't I could now completely identify with people struggling through life-changing, unforeseen circumstances where there's no clear way forward. No easy answers. No, my profound newfound faith rescued and sustained me. So I embraced it. Short time later, right just months, I had a personal experience where a friend in high school had a one night stand and she found out she was pregnant. Not with me, obviously, but just was a friend. I tried to convince her not to go through with the back alley abortion, because back then it was all clandestine, but she did it anyway. That impacted me deeply because I couldn't stop her. I didn't know what to say, the words didn't come. I saw her life deteriorate from that. And she's living with that memory till now. But 5 years later, I married the love of my life. I loved Louise since she was in seventh grade. I sat beside her behind her because of alphabetic order. she didn't know I existed until we dated on our senior prom. And that's the event when my dad died. But 7 years later, we had our son, Andy. We got married, had our son, Andy. And 5 years later, my precious daughter, Allie. And that absolute miracle of life was just overwhelming. Now, of course, I have two granddaughters, Marlo and Maeve. Marlo 7, Maeve 1. And it is incredible that people don't value life. So I've been committed to that all my life now. So it's been very important to me. So that's the long answer for how I came to hold my pro-life beliefs.
That's just a remarkable story, and certainly a testament to the sacredness of life from the very beginning for you and throughout your life. Now, how did you come to use your creative abilities to advance the cause of life?
Well, that's an interesting story. I went to college for a couple of years, didn't graduate, came out, was working at a little printing company and a newspaper. And it was the beginning of the computer age. So we were all learning together how to do design and designing ads. I was just doing designing ads and things for them for the paper. And I felt I had a knack for it and enjoyed it. But I was also doing singing in a gospel group because of my faith shortly after my dad passed. We sang in that group for a number of years until I had a vocal cord operation. We were full-time for a little bit of time, and then I had a vocal cord operation and rendered me not be able to sing. So I had to really figure out, where am I going? Where's life taking me? But after that, I worked at the recording studio where we recorded some albums, and the manager there said, could you manage it? So I managed it for a while. And then something happened there that the recording studio itself, he couldn't continue it because of some personal choices that the owner had made. But so I found myself looking for another job, and I got a job at just doing some marketing and design of ads for a local bank. And then in the bank, went from there to a major manufacturer of furniture up in the Lewisburg area, and was invited to interview there. So I went there and did marketing, and got involved in photography and design of catalogs and all kinds of things that expanded my abilities. So then a number of years later, I decided to go out on my own. And I went out on my own and I said, well, if I'm going to do these kinds of things for people that I've learned, I'd really like to not just promote furniture, but I would like to work with values-centered organizations. And so I just said, God, if you'll help me by just providing the contacts that I need to be able to work with people who care about life, who care about families, who care about, I remember helping the National Fatherhood Initiative get started. I helped Pennsylvania Family and Pennsylvania Pro-Life. We got together, and so that's that's really why, because I had the opportunity to do it on my own, I said, how can I do that? And I just asked God to provide the clients, which he did. And I'm very, very appreciative ever since.
And we are so appreciative of you. And a lot of this information is new to me. I didn't know you were a singer. I love to sing, and I can't imagine not being able to sing, and what a burden that must have been. But then God brought good out of it in terms of your other abilities and your gifts, your incredible gift for graphic design, and how that has touched so many lives, and I believe saved lives as a result. So it's just a remarkable story. It really is.
Yes, the in-between time sometimes is where God moves the best.
Absolutely.
You don't know where to go. And that's what I identify with women who don't know what to do next.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've been there, not the exact situation, obviously,
yes.
but I've been there. What do you do next?
Right.
And it is a leap of faith. And so yes. To be there, you know, all it takes is just one person sometimes, just to be there and have a word instant in season. And it makes all the difference.
It does. Now, where were you when Roe versus Wade was overturned?
I was probably, you know, I was thinking about that, and I knew it was, the rumors were happening that it was going to happen. And I think I was probably working on one of your projects for PA Pro Life. So, I have a difficult time in recalling what that exactly was, because I could see it coming. And they were leaking, so we knew that something was happening. So I'm not exactly sure, but I think I was probably sitting right here in front of a computer on a project for PA Pro Life.
And did you expect that to happen in your lifetime, or were you one of those people who were skeptical, or what were you thinking?
I had no idea. It just, there were so many times you were hopeful, and it looked like it was going to happen, and then in moments later, it would crash in on itself. So it was really one of those things where I didn't know, but even though we didn't know if it would ever make a difference or change over those years that since 73, when this all started, there was no option to give up until it happened. So you just need to keep forward, move forward, and leave the results in God's hands.
That's terrific. What changes have you seen in the pro-life movement over the years?
Well, I've seen a lot of changes, but I think, I really need to give acknowledgement, I think, to the Catholic Church for spearheading the whole movement. Without the Catholic Church and many devoted people like yourself and others, this wouldn't have been a movement. I don't think it would have survived. I don't know where we would be right now, but I see a lot of other people from many different denominations of different backgrounds now getting involved. And it's exciting to see that, we're able to make some dynamic moves forward. Even when things seem dismal and like it couldn't happen, it happens, because that's the power of God at work.
Well said. What role do you think pregnancy resource centers play in advancing a culture of life?
Well, they've been critical. I believe in, I'm such a believer in pregnancy centers. Years ago, when I was working locally here and just got started in my business, some people from my local area, a group of ladies that some of them I was friends with, some I were not, they approached me because I was doing graphic design and, marketing and things, and just it gets picked my brain. I think they had other motives as far as maybe get involved to help them, but And that's terrific. I'm glad they did that. They were exploring how to start an outreach ministry to women in crisis pregnancy situations through their church. Their church had said, we'd be willing to donate an office for you to do this and put in a telephone. that was pretty much it. I mean, that's what they thought. What can we do in our local area? Maybe we can run a paper, you know, a phone number in the local paper, and we'll sit there and wait for the phone to ring. So we talked about that. We talked about how would you do the formation of a organization like that, and how to brand it, and how to launch it, and where would you get the money for it? In the process of meeting, we decided it was worth trying, and we did it, and we named it Lifelines Pregnancy Care Center. And there was a group of people that came together to help on the advisory board, et cetera. All starting out, again, just in one room with the telephone in a local church. It wasn't even my church, but we decided that what we needed to do was be able to get the word out about this, and to raise funds, and we didn't know how to do that. So we said, well, who would we have if we could have a speaker at a banquet? Who would we have that if we could think of anybody? And somebody said, you know, I really think Cal Thomas would be a great person. And we were just small enough to not realize we were that small. So we said, well, you know, what could he say is other than no? So we picked up the phone, we called his office, and we told him what we were looking to do. And they said, well, you're in luck. He has only one date available. And that was the date that we were hoping to do. And that was on a Saturday night. So we booked it and said, this is great. God's really going to do something here. He's already doing something. How are we, a fledgling organization, getting Cal Thomas, you know, someone who's got a national syndicated programs, et cetera, coming in? And we had somebody step forward and said, I'll underwrite that, the cost for him. And so anything you make will go towards the actual the ongoing work of the ministry. So we were just surprised and flattened. We didn't know what, we never expected that. But then we got a call from the Cal Thomas's office saying, Cal Thomas has to withdraw from that date. He has something else that came up, he can't do it. But he's making a new date available for you. It's going to be on a Monday night. Can you do it? We said, of course, we'll try it. Come to find out afterwards, after we had the banquet, it was amazing. We raised enough support in one banquet to do a full year of budget. And we found out that there were so many conflicts the night we had originally thought we would have had almost no crowd. As it was, we were full to the capacity during that, you know, so it was an amazing thing how God works just in that. So, you know, people that want to get involved, start one. If you don't have one near you, start one. You don't have to know what you're doing. You just have to start, you just have to make the next step. And there was a man on the board I was president for 5 years, but before that, he was part of the start, and he was a pastor, and he was the best prayer I have ever heard. And he made such an impact on me. He unknowingly schooled me and unraveled me at the same time. I think his prayers had more to do with Lifeline success than anything I contributed. But his prayer really influenced my decision to go and help other mission-minded organizations, people, and organizations like PA Pro-Life to keep moving and go forward.
You're listening to Lifelines Radio, and we are speaking with creative professional Keith Erdman. I'm your host, Maria Gallagher, Legislative Director of the Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation. Keith, what advice would you have for a creative professional who wants to become involved or more involved in the pro-life movement?
Pretty simple words. It's just simply do it. I ask myself the question, and I repeatedly ask myself this question, if not me, who? If not now, when? You know, I just keep thinking that people that are on are thinking about this, or they have an opportunity to contribute to the pro-life movement, and they're not doing anything. They could be the missing critical link. They could be the ones that could make the difference, could move the movement forward, could save many lives, could be an influencer that that we need. But all it takes is one step. Say, take the next step. I'm going to do it, and do it. You'll find other people that'll help.
That's wonderful advice. What role can churches play in promoting life?
Well, same thing. I think, you know, get involved, volunteer, find a local pregnancy center near you, march for life, talk to your friends, just make a commitment to get involved and at least speak on life, behalf of life. Always, always, always be supportive of life. Because without that, where's the message of the church?
Keith, how do you go about designing the country's premier pro-life newspaper, Lifelines?
That's a good question. first of all, I'd be remiss in saying that, you know, whatever creative comes from this is really a byproduct of prayer, because you sit down and say, because you provide all the articles, you and oftentimes many of the photographs and those kinds of things. So it's really looking at what you provided and say, okay, how do we best communicate each message that you're trying to get across so that it'll connect with readers? And oftentimes the most struggling things are to how to do that so that it creatively appeals to people, draws them in. And often that is, you know, a picture still worth a thousand words, or maybe more with inflation. But much of my time, hours, literally hours of time, is to find the right illustrative photograph, or to put that together by merging multiple photographs or whatever. But it really starts first with, okay, Lord, I don't know how to do this, so you're going to have to guide.
What do you think are the biggest threats to innocent human life today?
Well, obviously abortion. It seems to be the mantra of America these days and around the world. But I think the biggest threat is it just seems like we're devaluing life. There's a me first attitude. There's it's my body, my choice, regardless of anybody else. And the innocent child doesn't get that same ability when abortion happens. So I really think that the biggest threat is that our media and everything else has been taken over by this culture of death, I guess is how you could say it, where they certainly don't value life to the extent that it needs to be.
What impact can young people have on promoting pro-life culture?
Wow. Young people are under attack for their moral beliefs, their convictions, on literally every side, in school, in their media, in their social media, in the courts. They're even coming after kids for stating an opinion. And I think they're critical. Without the next generation, not only people will die, but hope will die. And I think they need to realize that if they get involved early in their lives in some way, that God will direct them to make a major impact, and they'll see great results, even miracles in their lives.
We've got just a couple of minutes left, and I'm wondering, what is your dream for the pro-life movement?
Well, each one of us, that was a difficult one to think about, and it really is, I think each one of us, the dream is if we could just convince each one of us who hold this position for life, and we're pro-life, and that's a very good word, pro-life. I'm struck by the fact that, that Jesus himself in John 10:10 in the scriptures, he says, and it really described the two sides of that, where he talks about it, and he says, the thief comes to steal and kill and destroy. And I just keep thinking about the people that are against life. They're there to steal someone's life from, to kill that baby and destroy the life of the mom that's left. But Jesus says, I have come that they may have life and they may have it to the full. Another translation of that, the New Living Translation, says that these purposes to steal and kill and destroy. But my purpose, Jesus is saying, my purpose is to give them a rich and satisfying life. And I think, what we need to do is just help to convince our friends, our families, our neighbors, our communities, our counties, our state, our nation, and even the world. Life is precious. It's irreplaceable. And we need to value life above everything. And my dream for the pro-life movement is to continue doing that, one life at a time, one life at a time, one influencer at a time, because your words might be the ones that convince someone else to give life, to choose life.
Absolutely. Keith Erdman, creative professional extraordinaire, thank you for joining us on Lifelines Radio today.
Thank you, Maria.
You've been listening to Lifelines Radio. We've been speaking with creative professional Keith Erdman. I'm your host, Maria Gallagher, Legislative Director of the Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation. Thank you for joining us, and remember, there's always a reason to choose life.